What's up, fools? This is the QTR podcast. Of course, you already know that. I don't even know why I say that at the beginning of podcasts. But anyways, here we are together, me and you. It's going to be a special time, I guarantee you. And I have a special guest with me as well. But before I get into that, let's take care of a little bit of housekeeping. How about these two little things? You want to try them on for size. The first is, one, I am not an investment advisor. I hold no licenses. This is not investment advice. Do your research elsewhere. Don't listen to anything that I say. Everything is subject to the disclaimer on my website and in the podcast description. Bing, bang, boom. Just, if you're thinking about any of this as investment advice, it is not. It is not investment advice. That's number one. Number two is that this episode is brought to you kindly by the badasses that call themselves my Patreons. If you don't know what Patreon is a recurring donation service that allows you to donate as little or as much as you would like to support the podcast and keep it so that I continue to come upstairs at my house and scream into a microphone and then post the recordings on the web. Very technologically advanced. I remember when I first learned what a podcast was, I was like, it's just a fancy name for somebody recording their own shit and then just putting it on the web. It's like a song, except somebody's just talking. They came up with this whole different name for it. It's a podcast. It's like, dude, it's just you recording your own voice into something and then playing it back for people. Anyways, that's another discussion for another day. Let's talk real quick about some of the badasses that recently contributed to my Patreon. People like Austin Manair, Denny's Klimyentev. I fucked that up. Sorry. Nathan Master, John Fadul, Steve King, Fat Freddy's Cat, Trevor Courtney, Mike Hanlon, Austin G, Kevin Boyette, Mauricio Putz. Mauricio's been down for a long time. And then some of the older people, guys like Chris Boas coming through in a huge way that I appreciate. Guys like Chris Bede also coming through for me. Nev Smith with a proper donation that I appreciate. Jean Goulet, Bill Williams, Santo P, Matt Pillon, Brendan Egan. There's a fuckload of you guys. And going to make sure I try to shout out all you guys regardless of time you started and donation. I'll always get the new guys. But then I always want to go back and thank people like Michael Rossides, Jerry Baker, CJ Carey that have been down for a little while and continue to be patrons. So thank you guys very much. All right, with all that happy horse shit out of the way, I have Mark Spiegel with me today. And if you don't know who Mark Spiegel is, according to the bio that he has provided me, Mark is a managing member and portfolio manager of Stanfill Capital Partners. He is based out of New York. Prior to founding Stanfill, he worked as an investment banker with Piper Jaffray. He's 17 years in commercial real estate, and Mark knows what he's doing. So I'm going to just skip all the rest of that shit, Mark. I'll put it in the description. No offense to you, but I'm too tired to read all that stuff right now. Hey, you're a very smart guy. We'll just leave it at that.
I don't know about that, but I am honored to be on with the funniest man on the fringes of Wall Street.
Which is that's not a it's not a terribly difficult achievement, you know what I mean?
The Zero Hedge guys are also really funny, but they're like beyond the fringes of Wall Street. they're like if Alex Jones ran Facebook, he'd have to ask Tyler to leave because he's just too out there, you know.
Well, I'll tell you what, man, I love reading Zero Hedge. I really do.
They're the best. I mean, they're the best. They are hilarious. I love them too.
They understand what they're talking about too. They're not, you know, it's not a couple of Peckerwood jackasses just posting blog posts. I mean, these guys will break news on everything from like bond pricing to, you know, currency stories to geopolitical stuff, and they'll do it like super quickly. And the analysis that they put up is generally very spot on. Like, you can tell they've sat at a trading desk before, like they know what they're doing.
Yeah, they are real financial guys, and they're also quant guys. No, they're excellent. It's my go-to website, and then I can get in some, like, you know, white supremacy stuff too at the same time. So it's
yeah, I try to avoid that. Just clarify your comments because you're going to get a lot of shit for that. You mean getting into it? You said that as a joke, obviously.
Yeah, that was a joke. They actually fooled me the other day with the thing about the South African farm appropriation, but apparently that's not. totally true. So I don't know. I gotta dig into it. They're not going to take away the Elon Musk family farm, apparently, yet.
Anyway. Oh, Elon Musk. It's funny that you mentioned him.
Did
you want to talk about Tesla today, or was there something else on your mind? Or,
you know, there's pretty much nothing else on my mind, to be honest with you.
I believe you. I know it's a stretch, but I believe you. And I keep saying this is not a Tesla podcast, and it's not. Like, I've talked to Peter Schiff. I just did a one about Fannie and Freddie. This isn't a Tesla-exclusive podcast. It just happens to be a very interesting story, and you happen to be a very colorful individual, and I like having people like that on the podcast, as long as you don't get me sued, which really the joke would be on the person suing me anyway, so I don't have any assets. But if you, I'd like to hold on to the zero assets that I have. But
I can tell you that I've met a lot of terrific people by being short this freaking scam for 4.5 years, among whom are you, but a lot of guys, you know, like name guys, and to a person, they all tell me they've never seen anything like this in their entire careers. I mean, 30, 40 year careers. They've never seen a greater disconnect from reality than this stock. And I laugh when I see stuff about, oh, there's a short conspiracy theory. Let me tell you what the shorts talk about. We call each other up and go, who the hell is buying this? that's the conspiracy. We're completely mystified by this thing, which I guess is why it's so fascinating.
That is part of what we talk about, no doubt. And that's one of the things that Hedge Eye asked me about yesterday that I didn't really have an answer for. I just think this is one of those cases where, you know, they asked me, Mark, what I thought it would take for the institutional investors to dump this stock. And I think it's very tightly held right now. I think there's a lot of people, a lot of retail that own it because of the story and not necessarily because of the financials, obviously. They asked me, you know, what I think it would take. And I just said, I really don't know. I don't, you know, would it be a loss of confidence in Elon Musk? Would it be continued dilution? I mean, what is, we saw, I think Fidelity lightened up their stake a little bit. But what the fuck is it going to take for there to be capitulation in this name? And if it happens, I mean, I know you think it's probably inevitable, right?
There was a time maybe a year ago when one of my LPs thought that the only thing would get those guys to sell would be, like, you know, photos, which don't exist, by the way, of as far as I know, of like Elon Musk having sex with a goat. But I think if that happened now, you know, they would be blaming the goat. So I don't know. Does the company have to run out of money? I mean, does this SEC thing have to get really serious? Does the board, I mean, in other words, to get these guys to sell? Now, look, in fairness, I mean, Fidelity and T. Rowe, at least in Q2, dumped a lot of stock. And Fidelity also dumped a lot of stock in Q1 when I think T. Rowe added. So, you know, it's Bailey Gifford who's just sort of holding tight and some other guys. I don't know. I mean, if you ask these guys, it's total belief in Elon. Now, I do actually, I'm being a little bit facetious because what I do think will get them to sell could actually start as soon as next month when they see the formal debut of the Audi e-tron electric SUV and the Mercedes EQC electric SUV, both of which debut in September.
I don't think that's going to get institutional investors to sell. Absolutely not.
Well, you don't think they'll realize that they now own Palm and Blackberries are coming out, or they own a Blackberry and the iPhones, because they're superior to Tesla in every way, those vehicles.
No, I think if you're going to make an argument against Tesla that involves competition, it's going to be that the competition will eat up their market share. But I think that people that are long this company believe in the brand equity of Tesla, and they're trying to make the case, whether it's true or not, that, you know, it's a luxury brand that's all on its own. And, you know,
yeah, but it's not. But it's not true. And they'll see that in the sales figures. I mean, you can already see that Model S and X sales are in a double digit percentage decline this year. And that's before this better stuff debuts. And so far, the only luxury EV that's debuted is the Jaguar, and it has topped the Tesla in every review. And I've spoken to a number of guys who have driven both cars, and they all tell me to a person, guys and gals, they all tell me to a person that the Jaguar is a superior car. And, you know, if you look at the history of comparison tests between Jaguars and Mercedes and Audis and Porsches, I mean, Jaguars always finish fourth, right? So what does that tell you? I mean, wait till you see the Audi and the Mercedes and the Porsche. And that's when these guys who own this thing are going to wake up and realize, whoa, this was a nice product for its time, the way a Palm Pilot was, but now it's trailing edge technology. I don't know if they need to see those cars in the showrooms, which will be the Jaguar imminently and the other ones early next year or middle of next year. But or if they just see them on a stage and maybe get 6 months ahead of the showroom and say, whoa, okay, you know, what people really love, everyone who says, oh, I love my Tesla, I'm never leaving Tesla. What those people don't realize, the ones who say that, is what they love is they love an electric drivetrain. Okay. They love the instant torque. They love the quiet. They love charging it. And they're mistaking luxury EV love for Tesla love. Okay. So once they realize that they can get, that they can love a luxury EV and have a much better interior.
Right.
And have a much better service experience. And by the way, save money. Well, because, I mean, just as an example, all these cars are priced less than the comparable Tesla. I mean, Model S and X sales are going to, you know, they'll be cut in half next year and probably cut in half again, you know, the year after that. And that's where the margin is for this company, such as it is, you know?
Yeah, I think the biggest point that you made there is, so look, I think you're 100% right about the electric drivetrain. I think what turns people on about this car is the instant torque and the quiet. And that's kind of very new to people. So to people that are experiencing that for the first time with a Tesla, and when they get to a point when they realize that's not a Tesla exclusive feature, that's going to be a huge difference maker for a lot of them. I think the more important thing that you just pointed out is the service and the quality. So you drop, you know, $60,000 into my lap and you tell me that I can go out and I can consider purchasing a Jaguar. Well, actually, the Jaguar retails for like $100,000, right?
No. Jaguar starts at $70,000.
Okay.
Which is $7,000 less than the least expensive Model S and $13,000 less than the least expensive X. And the Jaguar has the full tax credit, which those guys, you know, that gets cut in half for Tesla after December.
Okay. So let's just suggest that you drop $70,000 in my lap and I get the choice of a Model 3 or even a Model S or the Jaguar I-Pace. I'm going to go with the Jaguar and I'll tell you why. Even if without driving it, I'm going to go with the Jaguar and I'll tell you why. Because the stories that have been coming out about Model 3s and Model S's also too, falling apart, being shipped with fucking cracks in the roof. I saw one today. Other ones where the wheels are flying off. You know, the Model S had a problem that was reported about one of the ball joint sockets above the suspension was all fucked up. And then the people's inability to get these cars serviced when they want. And all you have to do is go on Twitter and even go on some of the Tesla Motors forums and Reddit to see that there is a litany of people that have problems. They took delivery, either the bumper fell off or, you know, there's some type of issue thing, you know, panels are misaligned, basic stuff, and they can't get service. There's people, they can't get in contact with the company, they can't get service, they've been waiting for weeks, some people have been waiting for months. And as a vehicle owner, if I'm going to go out and spend $70,000 for a luxury vehicle, you know, to me, number one, I want to make sure I'm getting quality off the line, right? So that Business Insider story by Lynette Lopez a couple days ago that said only 14% of the Model 3s that came off the line in the last week of June didn't need to be reworked. That frightens me as a potential purchaser. The second thing is you want to know if you have a warranty or if you have a service plan you're going to be able to take it somewhere close and it's going to be able to be honored, you know, by people that know what they're doing. And these companies like Jaguar, Audi, Mercedes, they have decades after decades, of them centuries old experience in doing this.
That's 100% true. And that's definitely going to hurt Tesla significantly in the very near term. But see, I know how the bulls finally, I think I know how the bulls think on this stock. I mean, basically, I sit down, I sort of try to mentally subtract 50 IQ points and think like a Tesla bull. And what I've come up with...
I think there's some smart bulls, too.
Really? Who?
I don't know, but I know that there's... Listen. I think that you're not doing anybody on the short side a service by insulting all the bulls and assuming that everybody on the bull case is stupid. I think that...
I've heard them all. I mean, they're nice guys. I mean, that guy... Or they're just young and naive and not necessarily stupid. I mean, I did this thing on Cheddar, actually the day before Musk posted his fraudulent tweet about a buyout being secured. And it was with that guy Galileo, the Let's Go to YouTube guy.
Right.
Very nice guy. You know, glib, good talker. You know, he's just 25 years old. He's not old enough to realize, you know, just doesn't have enough experience to realize that what he's talking about here is a story stock. But to your point, because we got sidetracked on my insulting the bulls.
Just trying to make the point, and I'd say this as any investor on any stock that, you know, underestimating your counterparty, I think, can be a very dangerous thing to do.
But I've underestimated the stupidity of my counterparty. So that kind of ties into my argument. I should have subtracted more IQ points. And by the way, I don't have that many to start with. So that tells you how I really think. But anyway, to my point, which is I understand what these people – and these people are thinking, well, you know, if we throw enough money at the service centers and, you know, if we throw enough money at the – in the factory, we get a better guy in there. Elon will fix the factory, and then everything will be great. I'm cutting through all that and saying you could fix all of that stuff, and you still have a trailing edge, inferior product to the Audis, Mercedes, Porsches, and even the Jaguar that are out between right now. In the case of the Jaguar, I mean, literally 15 minutes ago, the LA Times posted a review of it, and it's already been reviewed and. You know, worldwide, you know, between right now and Jaguar and let's say 12 months from now, approximately when the Porsche Taycan is in showrooms, and between those two things, the Audi and the Mercedes. And by the way, Audi's following up that one with another electric car, you know, a year later. And Mercedes is going to have an electric model, pure electric, in every single one of its, you know, ranges, S-Class, E-Class, C-Class, whatever, within the next 4 years. And, I mean, these guys are just going to bury Tesla. And the thing is, as I said a little while ago, these cars are not only the next generation beyond the Tesla, but they're less expensive. I mean, car for car, you know, the Audi is expected to price, you know, probably maybe $13,000 cheaper, at least several thousand dollars cheaper. Yeah, I'm sorry, about $13,000 cheaper than the comparable battery size Model X. So, you know, maybe a few thousand less than the base X. And they're better cars. So even if you fix service, you know, even if you fix the quality of what you're building an inferior product. And the funny thing is, you know, Tesla bulls like to have it both ways. Oh, the beauty of electric cars is they're so simple, but yet Tesla has all this dominant IP. Well, guess what, dude? It's not both. If they're simple, I mean, you don't think Mercedes engineering that builds these incredible Formula One race cars can build a car around a couple of electric motors? Of course they can, if they're simple, right?
Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
But then they take it a step further, and they build electric motors that don't go into limp mode, you know, in the first, you know, 3 or 4 miles on a racetrack, which is what even the Tesla Model 3 performance version – which Road and Track ran on the Lime Rock track a couple of weeks ago and wrote an article about it. And they said it was a lot of fun on the track. And I don't doubt that at all, by the way. It went into limp mode after 3 laps.
Which, what is
Lime
that?
Rock's Lime Rock's a short track, so that's 4.5 miles.
What's limp mode?
Limp mode means it pulls power off so the battery doesn't overheat.
And
Porsche has made it damn clear that's not going to happen on the Taycan. And they're doing it through a different kind of cooling system. And it's more sophisticated technology and, of course, better interior. So my point is, even if Tesla fixes its problems, it still has a trailing edge product. And I think that any ball should be able to realize that. And but, you know, I mean, I can see it now because I've seen these things running on the Nürburgring and I've read interviews with the engineers, but these guys have their heads in the sand. Okay, have your head in the sand, but I can tell you this, the Porsche dealer in the heart of Silicon Valley, a friend of mine spoke to them, and they had, this was like a month ago, they already had over 300 Taycan reservations. And, you know, all those people are coming out of Teslas, or most of them, because that was the hot car in Silicon Valley. So, you know, we're going to get to the point pretty soon where you show up at the country club with a Tesla and, you know, people take some pity on you, you know?
I think
they have the European luxury car, which is better electric car. Go ahead.
I think one of the interesting points that you make is one of the things that I talked about yesterday. When you're talking about whether or not Mercedes or Porsche has the wherewithal to produce the same technology that Tesla does, I think that also leads to another interesting point, which is that, you know, when we were first sold a bill of goods about how Tesla was going to manufacture and how they were going to assemble these vehicles.
Yeah, now they're building fucking cars in a tent.
Right. It was...
And then they're at the same time, they're burning piles of cardboard in a tent.
Well, yeah, I don't know what happened with that yesterday. But the point I'm trying to make is, you know, we were sold a bill of goods that it was going to basically rewrite the best practices in the industry. And of course, that turned out not to be the case. And it looks like the very same thing is happening with production quality. And if what you're saying is true, I mean, this leads back to why I would want a Jaguar instead of a Tesla if given the choice, because it's such a low margin, capital intensive, super extremely difficult business to enter. I mean, it's like airlines, right? That if you make the mistake of assuming that Ford or General Motors or Porsche or Audi or Mercedes or BMW haven't arrived at the best practices in the industry already and aren't on the forefront of what's capable and what will be capable, I think you're making a huge mistake.
Of course. And plus, as I said, I mean, not only are these products better, they're less expensive than Tesla's, and they'll have the full tax credit. And one of the reasons they can be less expensive is they're cross-subsidized by the profits from the conventional cars that these guys are making. And Tesla doesn't have that luxury, you know? And of course, as these cars flood the market, and it's already happening, the value of ZEV credits, zero emission vehicle credits that Tesla sells, which is really their only profitable product, that goes to zero because nobody's going to need to buy them because everyone's making enough electric cars already. So I've never been able to find a bull. The only one who ever sat down with me really was that nice guy Galileo, and he's got all pie in the sky stuff. And if you show Galileo a picture of a Jaguar, the Jaguar or the Audi or the Mercedes, he doesn't really have anything to say. Then it all comes down to Elon, Elon, Elon. But I mean, Elon is a certified liar. I mean, he lied about that 420. He even admitted it afterwards. I mean, you know, I mean, the guy lied. Listen, my whole basis for this short position originally had nothing to do with Elon Musk. It had to do with exactly what I'm telling you, which is that if these cars sell, the Europeans will come in and destroy these guys. And that's exactly what's going to happen. But the short thesis became more and more focused on Musk, although it's still not the focus. For me, the focus is the competitive environment. But, you know, I first heard this guy on a conference call. I think it might have been 2014. I'd have to look. I wrote a Seeking Alpha article about it. He goes, "We don't discount our cars for anyone. You know, if you buy a Tesla, you're paying full price." He was saying this shit at the same time there were like thousands of brand new inventory cars available at heavy discounts, and Consumer Reports even wrote about it. And at the same time, they were offering a discount referral program. And I'm seeing this, and I wrote about it at the time, and I'm like, what is this? I mean, what are you going to believe? You know, Elon Musk or your own lying eyes? I mean, and this guy's been getting away with this stuff for years. And I think the bulls probably think, oh, well, yeah, he's not really lying. He's just exaggerating. You know, I'm sorry. You're either discounting your cars or you aren't. That's not exaggerating. And then their backup would be, all right, so, you know, Elon lies a little, but he's our liar. He's going to make us all money. Well, to that I say, guess what? You know, this is stuff that's easily checked, right? I mean, we can easily see, yes, they're discounting cars when Musk says they aren't. We can easily see there's no 420 confirmed offer when Musk says there is, right? So what do you think about what's going on inside this company in the darker reaches of the company, the bowels of the company, so to speak, that you can't see,
right? And
when
that,
he tells you what's going on
that's
there.
A I point mean, that's a point I make all the time, and I
mean,
just
what do you think you think he's only lying about the stuff that you can publicly refute him on? How about the Spanish wedding thing? Even when the fucking guy was confessing to the New York Times about how he's working so hard, he lied there about rushing right back from the wedding, his brother's wedding. I don't begrudge anybody going to their brother's wedding, for sure, but I mean, the guy has to lie about that too. I mean,
what did he lie about? I'm not familiar with that.
Oh, you didn't know this? He said he flew to his brother's wedding and rushed right back to the factory. Well,
right.
That was bullshit. He spent 3 days in Spain or 4 days in Spain, and then he and with his family, and then they went to Ireland to visit the Game of Thrones set.
How do you know that?
Well, I'll know that for two ways. Number one, he tweeted about it.
Okay.
He freaking tweeted from the Game of Thrones set. Number two, there was an article of photographs in the newspaper, like the Irish newspaper.
Got it.
I think it was Ireland. So, I mean, what is this guy? I mean, how does a mind like that work when you just blatantly spew stuff out that's easily double checked? I mean, you know, I'm not going to get political here because, you know, policy-wise, you know, sometimes I support the guy, but I mean, Musk is Trump personality-wise, right? I mean, Trump just says shit, and you check it, and it's wrong, and then he just moves on and pretends like it never happened. But you can't do that. We're doing it in the president because we have him. You know, there's no choice at this point. But you can't do that in a CEO. I mean, how do you know what's going on in there?
You can't do it as an officer of a publicly traded company. And this is what I was trying to explain to Hedgeye yesterday. If you didn't listen to my podcast on Hedgeye, I was about as hyped up as you are right now. Probably sounded like I was on crack during the interview, like you sound like you are right now. But I mean that in the nicest way possible. It's Friday happy hour, so I hope we can speak freely with one another. But anyways, look, the point of the matter is that the guy from Hedgeye, probably, you know, unbeknownst to him, was just trying to have a good time, but he was laughing off some of the stuff that Musk had done. And I stopped him at one point and I was like, why is that funny? You know, why? This isn't somebody that I would want to work for, number one. And it's not somebody I would want to invest in, number two. But I think you make a very good point about if this is what he's saying publicly, what kind of horseshit is going on behind the scenes? And, you know, the number of executive departures that we've seen, you know, could that kind of be some writing on the wall that this guy is very difficult to work for, or that the place is disorganized, or kind of all of the above? But I don't really get how, with this, like the tweet, for instance, I don't understand how he gets a pass on that. I read a couple articles over the last couple days saying, oh, he, you know, they might let him off the hook for it. The SEC might let him off the hook for it. Or it's just Elon being Elon. Even Jim Cramer came out and said, oh, it's a difficult name to short, and Elon's being Elon. It's like, at what point do these people get some type of major reality check that this guy is just pissing on securities laws? And,
well,
go ahead.
So there were two issues, right? One is the legal issue, which is what you're talking about here. And sure, I mean, they have to punish this guy, or it's like open season for every CEO in America of a public company to just spew bullshit and pump his stock. But there's also just the, you know, even if they didn't punish him, how is this guy investable? How is it investable as a fiduciary with other people's money to invest in a guy who is an easily proven liar?
Right.
And doesn't that make you wonder what else he's lying about, that you can't just check his plane logs or look in the newspaper or go to your local Tesla store and see the discounted cars right there, or see him even online at that point? I mean, how is that investable? And how do these mutual funds – I mean, look, a guy like this always blows up. They always do. I don't know any other – I mean, people compare Musk to Steve Jobs, right? Steve Jobs was a money-making shark. Every single year Steve Jobs ran Apple, as a public company, except the partial year when they sort of brought him back to save it, that company was profitable. As far as I know, Musk has never consistently run a company profitably. I mean, comparing Musk to Jobs, we're talking about businessmen here. Jobs was a businessman besides being an innovator. Musk isn't a businessman. Musk is a cash incinerating, you know, dreamer selling stories, you know? So I don't see how he's investable, and I don't see how any mutual fund, I mean, when this does collapse, and it will, you know, look, my timing has clearly been horrible. I mean, I've been short this for over 4 years, right? But when this collapses, those mutual funds that own this are going to get their asses sued off because it's all there in plain sight, right? So this guy at Baillie Gifford, you know, who if he still owns this, if he hasn't dumped it after seeing that blatant securities fraud about the 420 tweet, I mean, when this thing collapses, this guy doesn't think he's going to get sued? Listen, by the way, I don't know that he still owns it. Maybe he got smart and dumped this thing, but clearly the stock isn't down enough for all the mutual funds to have dumped it. So there's some guys out there who are going to get their asses sued off, and deservedly so, because it's all out there in plain sight what's going on here.
Yeah, and I just don't understand. I said to Hedgeye yesterday, the guy was like, because somebody had tweeted to me while I was doing the interview, it's like, you sound really emotional, you sound outraged. And what I said is, you know, it's not just people that hold the stock directly too, Mark. I mean, the stock is included in an index, which, you know, is represented by ETFs and other funds. And people have exposure to this company through all different types of derivative means, you know, in their 401ks, in their pension funds, even if they don't own the stock directly, you know, they own some fund that owns part of the bonds or whatever. And those people don't really know what's going on here. And I just, you know, I said to Hedgeye, I'm kind of speaking on behalf of those people because somebody needs to bring a counterbalance to a media narrative on this company that up until this year, because I think it's shifted a little bit, but up until this year has been mostly rosy. And I think it's what's helped perpetuate the stock from, you know, $17 a share to $350 a share.
Well, look at these idiots on CNBC. Apparently, I don't even watch CNBC anymore. Who put Kathy Wood on today, this woman from ARK, with her $4,000 price. And apparently, they featured her yesterday and today, continually. I mean, who the F is running CNBC that they would do this nonsense? You know,
yeah, she was on today before I left the office pitching her case, which is for $4,000 a share.
I mean, it's the most airheaded, bubble-headed. I mean, look, I mean, I'll admit she's kind of hot in that Sarah Palin kind of way. But I mean, this is the most.
Don't you think making statements like that though, it makes you look like you're an ass?
Me?
Yeah. I mean, don't you think that
making a Sarah Palin line?
Well, no. I'm just saying. Don't you think when we're talking about investing? And we're talking about.
I'm a total ass.
Yeah, I know. But don't you think that takes away from the credibility of what I think is a very good thesis that you have?
I don't know. I don't, because I think the thesis is pretty clear to everybody who's a sentient being.
Okay.
And the rest of it is just making jokes. You know, have some fun with that while I'm losing fucking money on this thing.
If it's cathartic for you, maybe I guess that explains it. But I mean, it's just like Elon Musk's personal life. Like, I know he's dating this musician and there's all this crazy shit going on, but like, I don't concern myself with his personal life, but for the fact that, you know, it kind of has made an appearance here over the last couple of months. Like you said, the guy was in Spain for this wedding, and then he, you know, and I know you're trying to make a point that he lied, and I don't have any issue with that, but I don't concern myself with his personal life at all. Because I don't think, like, people are reporting he's a recreational drug user, all this stuff. I hope personally he's okay. I don't wish any harm on him, but that,
wait a second.
That doesn't.
You don't think a guy who could be a potentially be, and I don't have firsthand knowledge of this, so I'm not accusing him of it, potentially be a heavy recreational drug user. You don't think that's important on a guy who's running a car company?
Oh, I do.
Making decisions.
Yeah,
and
I think it's really important.
And by the way, I'll get a little sidetracked here a little bit. good luck. Good luck having this guy still running SpaceX. You don't think the Air Force and NASA take this shit really seriously? I wouldn't be surprised. I'm serious about this. This is not just throwing shit out there. I wouldn't be surprised if Musk were thrown out of SpaceX before he's even thrown out of Tesla. And I think he will wind up eventually thrown out of Tesla.
Why is that?
Let's say he was, and I'm not saying he is, but let's say he was a heavy recreational drug user.
Right.
Do you think NASA's going to let him head this company sending astronauts into space and the Air Force and the CIA, whatever, let him head this company sending satellites into space? You think that's going to happen? That's not going to happen. You know, he's going to be gone. I bet he's gone from SpaceX before he's gone from Tesla. Here, there's your who's that gas bag on Fox? Gas Bagarino? On Twitter? I tried to follow that guy for like 3 hours yesterday. I couldn't take it anymore. But in Charlie's words, there's your scoop. I bet, and it's not really a scoop because I'm just making it up, but I bet that he's gone from SpaceX before he's gone from Twitter. I'm sorry, before he's gone from Tesla.
Yeah, that's an interesting...
Tesla, Twitter, same shit. None of them make money, but at least Twitter's fun and entertaining.
Hey, Twitter actually is GAAP profitable, I think.
You're right. It does make money. Right.
Yeah, no, I haven't heard anybody predict that before. I haven't heard anybody kind of put that out there. I certainly think that the board has been way too complacent in governing him, and that's one of the things that... Well, first off, let's go back to the woman with the $4,000 price target. Without commenting on her looks,
I mean, as a compliment, I wasn't insulting her.
I know, but it was a backhanded insult by comparing her to Sarah Palin. I'm assuming. I mean, look, you can say you don't agree with her, which obviously you don't, and I don't either, you know, but. We can talk about the fact that it's insane. I believe it to be completely insane and totally irresponsible to have this woman on television saying that this stock could go to $4,000 when the SEC is formally investigating the company. And I mean, I just think it's ridiculous.
So where do you draw the line between insane and just like the stupidest argument you've ever heard in favor of a stock?
Well, it's close. Yeah, it's up there for me.
It's close.
It doesn't make.
All right, I'll take close.
It doesn't. It certainly doesn't make a lot of fucking sense to me, to be honest with you. But
all right, fine. I'll take close.
Where do you think this idea of a recapitalization goes? I want to just run one potential situation past you. When Gasparino reported that there was the potential for a recapitalization if they couldn't take the company private, which in and of itself is ridiculous, right? This guy comes out, he says he's going to take it private for $420. He basically writes, investors have the option to sell at $420 or participate in, you know, an SPV or whatever that they're going to do for the private entity. So the fact that we're even talking about a recapitalization and not going private is just insane because it, like you said, I mean, it's basically just a lie. Having said that, I was thinking about recapitalization scenarios the other day with a friend of mine, and I thought he actually made the point that if somebody came in and invested, you know, into like a $5 billion convertible preferred with, you know, a large dividend and tons of preferences and tons of warrants, that might be a possibility. And they used the example of Buffett investing in HomeCap, which there was plenty of legal liability there. And, you know, it was an extremely dilutive investment that he made, but HomeCap stock came out and ripped after that. Now, you think that there's a chance that an investment like that happens? And if it does, you know, could the equity go on a tear regardless of what it means for the company's valuation?
Well, To put $5 billion into this company in that kind of a structure, you would have to really believe in the fundamentals of the company. Because that's not like, that's not like if they had a registration statement. Which,
that's
by
not
the way,
true. You don't need to believe in the fundamentals of the company. All you have to believe is that the confidence that you're going to lend the company by investing in such a note will jolt the equity higher and that the provisions in the preferreds, like a you know, being able to put it back to the company or something like that, in conjunction with a bunch of other fail safes that they have, could make you money. You don't have to believe in the viability of the company after 5 years. You could be in and out.
I'm not sure that. Well, first of all, $5 billion won't get them 5 years, and I'm not sure that. I mean, everything they have is leveraged, is borrowed against. I'm not sure that $5 billion, that you'd have any assurance of getting that money back, I guess what I'm saying. So, I mean, if they could get a registration statement through, and by the way, that's a question that is often discussed, I guess they could. They might just have to do a lot of ugly disclosure about various SEC stuff going on that they don't want to do. But if they could get that through, I mean, this is a stock. It trades billions of dollars a day. I'm sure they could raise a quick $2 billion just at a 10% discount, right? And the hedge funds would just blow it out the next day, and they could do that. But I don't know that they could get $5 billion of, let's call it, strategic or long-term private equity style money into there, because what good is a liquidation preference when everything is already borrowed against, right?
Well,
what I'm saying is you'd have to really believe in the business.
It wouldn't be – well, that I don't think that's true. I mean, there are other preferences aside from a liquidation preference that would, offer a benefit. So, I mean, like I said, some type of extremely dilutive warrants, where there's essentially coverage with warrants, a dividend in the interim, I think there's many different ways to structure a deal where somebody could be in and out in 3 or 4 years. And
sure. Well, yeah, 3 or 4 years, but I don't think $5 billion gets in 3 or 4 years. Look, I mean, let me be clear. I'm not in the camp that, although I have fun with the queue, I'm not in the camp that Tesla is a near term. And when I say near term, I mean by the end of this year bankruptcy. I mean, it's possible.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
And I own, I own a bunch of cheap puts. It's not a lot of money I put into them in case that happens. But I'm in the camp that Tesla is a regular old busted growth story by this time next year, because that's when the Audis and the Mercedes are in the showrooms and SNX are getting slammed again, and the Model 3, whatever backlog there is gone. It seems to be gone already, at least in the U.S. or almost gone in North America. So, like a near-term bankruptcy, that would be nice. But someone could put $5 billion in today. This is still a busted growth story next year. I mean, I don't know if you were around after 2000, but, there were a number of tech companies that essentially sold at a zero enterprise value and sometimes a negative enterprise value. They had a ton of cash on the balance sheet.
Right.
But they were busted growth stories that weren't viable businesses. So, yeah, I mean, hell, if somebody put $5 billion into this company today, yeah, the stock would definitely spike. But I'd sit there and wait, and then reality of sales numbers would come through, and people would realize what they own at this time next year,
Yeah, I mean, I've been saying that for a while, that people were going to realize what they own, and it's so far, unfortunately, it hasn't happened. So
let people see the Q3, the quarter we're in now, Model 3 numbers, which by all accounts, seem to be sort of a disaster. And then look, here's the other thing. There are so many landmines with this company. I mean, this guy, he's entertaining, Stuart Meisner, this lawyer who's got the whistleblowers.
Right.
He's on Twitter a lot. He's got Martin Tripp, and then he's got the new whistleblower who talked about the drug dealing and the more serious
Hansen
issue.
Yeah, the guy's name's Hansen.
Yeah, which is more serious is the phone tapping, which is like, that's a felony. And the missing like the copper that went away, and like the possible, I'm not saying
it was
happened,
like $35 million worth of copper or something said was stolen.
Right now, and then there was other stuff he said. I think Tripp is the guy who said that scrap, instead of being written off, which would immediately impact earnings, that they instead called it test stuff and they depreciated it. I mean, that's accounting fraud. But if that happened, by the way, I don't know.
True, that right. If it's true, right.
But my point is that's only two whistleblowers that we heard about because they didn't mind going public and because Meisner has fun with Twitter and he's got a big mouth like you and I do. there have to be scores of other whistleblowers who are talking to the SEC and the DOJ right now who are just quieter about it. You know, there's no way these are the only two Tesla whistleblowers out there. So that's a landmine that could blow up anything, you know, and that could happen at any time.
Well, what I'd be interested in is checking out discovery from the lawsuit that alleges that Musk couldn't make the Model 3 production targets. You know which lawsuit I'm talking about, right?
Well, that's a great lawsuit. And in fact, I think I even posted on Scribd the whole lawsuit, but there's a Zero Hedge story that linked to it and described it really well. And they interviewed 11 former Tesla people, all of whom explicitly warned Musk that it wouldn't happen. And, you know, Musk said, hey, I don't give a fuck. I'm going to tell the market that it is going to happen. And
allegedly.
And of course, well, Musk definitely did that. The only question is, you know, did Musk just think they were wrong?
That's going to be his argument.
Musk's argument is going to be, hey, I'm an optimist. You know, I thought they were wrong. It turned out they were right. What can I tell you? You know, but that ties into the bond offering also. So, no, that's a great lawsuit. And that gives you some good insight, too. But there are a lot of these. Listen, how about the new lawsuit with the tweet? So, you know, people were focusing on the – I mean, I'm talking about the 420 tweet. I mean, people have been focusing on the short selling lawsuit. And I'll tell you a funny story. You know, because I've been vocal on this, I've been contacted by several lawyers asking me if I was willing to join their suit. And I had to tell them that I didn't lose any money on that tweet, that in fact I got shorter on that tweet because I looked at it. I said, this is bullshit, you know? So I don't have that case. And the funny thing is, these lawyers told me they spoke to several of the big short funds, and none of them covered any on that tweet. They all thought the same thing I thought, which is, this is bullshit. But there's a real case here for anybody who bought the stock to establish or add to a long position because they believed 420. And that could literally be billions of dollars, and it still hasn't been refuted. I mean, the board,
a huge legal liability.
As of today, which is August 24th, and I don't remember what day that tweet was, but it was a while ago, the board still has not put out an 8K saying, Elon was full of shit, he didn't have any deal, he was dreaming, he's hoping to do a deal. They haven't done that, right? So if I were a lawyer, I'd say the meter is still running, but
The meter is still running.
So that's a big liability. So somebody's going to put – look, this company already has $3 billion, or it did, maybe it's more now, of accounts payable, right, as of the end of last quarter. And it's still burning cash. And, you know, even Q3, which will be the best quarter they ever have going forward from now, there's still going to be a gap loss there of, I don't know, $100 million, $200, $300 million, whatever it is, and then it gets worse. I mean, what does $5 billion even do? I mean, that basically just plugs the holes in the balance sheet and maybe sets aside another $2 billion for all these lawsuits. Where's the CapEx going to come from, you know, to build a Model Y? Where's the CapEx going to come from to build more than a total, including Model 3 and Model S and X, to build more than a total of, you know, 5,500 cars a week consistently, you know, that aren't shit boxes, which is what they're getting by trying to cram through all these other cars, you know, through the lines and the paint shop and whatever. I don't know, the bottlenecks. I mean, $5 billion doesn't do it. You really need $10 billion in here. And then you have to say, well, wait a second. Why am I going to put $10 billion into this company when I could let it go bankrupt and buy the debt for $10 billion and own 100% of the equity, right? I mean, it doesn't make sense, I don't think, for somebody to put real money into this company at anywhere near this kind of valuation. You know, look, but as people say, I mean, there's the stupid money risk, and there's a lot of them out there, and maybe somebody will come along and believe in the story and believe he can protect himself and do something. And if it happens, it happens. And then the stock will spike. And then, you know, then the sales numbers will come in, right? And then the P&L will come in.
Yeah.
And then people will be like, okay, well, that money wasn't that smart. It might have put $50 on the stock, but guess what? Model 3 deliveries were only, I don't know, 40,000 in Q3 instead of the 60 we thought they'd be, right?
At some point, the 60 or 70 or $80 billion valuation on the equity or whatever it would be at that point is going to have to, you know, the rubber's going to have to meet the road at some point. And it doesn't matter if it's now. Obviously, the market still thinks it's a $60 billion company now, or if it's 5 years from now, or it's 5 months from now. At some point, and God help this company if the broader market sentiment changes and we're out of this bull market and we enter into recession, which I think all stocks will be viewed probably a lot more skeptically than they are right now. But, you know, let's just assume that doesn't even happen. At some point, the rubber's going to have to meet the road with the valuation. So it's a question of how long the market can afford this company the time for the fundamentals to try and get near what the value of the company is. And right now, that's just a big air pocket between zero and $60
billion. Right. So I think a lot of these guys were waiting to see what happens with the Model 3. And I don't think they fully realize yet that that is a niche car. And it's not only a niche car for the price, you know, at which, you know, Tesla can deliver it without losing a ton of money, which is the price they have now starting at 50K. But it's a niche car, you know, for the fact that it's electric, which automatically makes it niche. And the fact that it has that stupid center-mounted touchscreen is the only way to control the thing. And unless you are a total tech geek, I mean, if you're a normal human, you're going to be like, what the fuck? I got to go through this thing to turn on the windshield wipers or open the glove box or whatever. I mean, it's not a mass market car. And this is what's going to happen, and it's going to be reflected in the sales numbers, you know. And that's when those guys will give up, when they see better cars with real dashboards that are electric, you know. So I think this whole thing, no matter what money goes into this company now, I think the whole valuation falls apart, you know, at some point next year, you know.
Yeah, well, we'll have to see. You know, I'd like to know how many Model 3 reservations there are exactly and how many have been canceled and how many have not been canceled. That would
be... So do you believe the you know, maybe you know, I'm sure you know this answer. You know what the number of reservations Tesla claimed at the end of the quarter, right?
Yeah, it was like over 400,000, right?
No, do you remember the exact number they claimed?
420,000?
420.
Was it?
Yeah, it was.
That's interesting.
It was 420. So, you know, you tell me, is that a real number? I don't know. But I sure as heck hope that if Silver Lake or whatever is doing any real diligence on this thing, they will dig in and see how many actual, you know, hands-off reservations, you know.
Right, and I think, you know, it's...
Arm's length reservations there are,
it's,
you know.
It's pertinent to try and figure out how many refunds there's been as well, because if you look at what they did with the Model 3 the last week of June, if you believe the Business Insider report, which I do, you know, they had no problem filing an 8K saying that they manufactured over 5,000 vehicles, or they factory gated them, or, you know, and then we find out that, well, most of them needed to be reworked. And so, you know, you have to look at how things are phrased and how things are worded. Because I think maybe there are 420,000 reservations, but who knows if that, you know, what that counts and wasn't what it doesn't count. I think we would just be so much better served if they were just way more forthcoming and honest about what's going on.
Well, a couple of things. So first of all, on the reservations, whatever the number is, I guarantee the vast majority of them is for the $35,000 car that doesn't exist.
Right.
And so a lot of them have gone away. Listen, they lost a lot of reservations. I was watching it on Twitter, the streaming tweet deck, that day that the that came out that he had contributed money to the Republican congressional pack or whatever.
Right.
That was funny to watch. But anyway, those reservations are for a car that doesn't exist and will never exist. You know, so you know that's
you
part
don't
of
think
the story.
You don't think they're ever going to make the $35,000 Model 3?
I don't think one will be made within the lifetime of the company, you know. I don't think, and the battery costs aren't falling quickly enough is what I'm saying. So, and by the way, you know, there's another issue, and look, maybe this is a total non-issue, so I'm not saying this is an issue, okay? But I've been talking about this with people, as of others, you know, for a month now, and it was actually pointed out yesterday in a Seeking Alpha article that this car has not been yet homologated for Europe, and by the strict letter of the law, that touchscreen only control is not acceptable in Europe. Now, will that law get waived? I don't know. You know, maybe it will. So I'm not looking to make something here that isn't, but I'm just throwing it out there that clearly with all this inventory has piled up, at least in the two-wheel drive Model 3s, why aren't they starting to take $2,500 deposits from Europe and saying, hey, we'll be starting to ship cars there to you guys January 1 or November, December, whatever. Is this car not legal in Europe? I don't know. Yeah, someone should look into that.
There was an article out today, too, today or yesterday. It was one of the automobile magazines. I forget what it was, but talking about how Model 3 deposits in Australia are dropping.
I saw that. Because of the delays.
Because the delays, which were helped along, I guess, by some people said how Musk was behaving and all the personal stuff that's going on with him. But they've been waiting on a right-hand drive vehicle, right-hand drive version of the vehicle, and I think Tesla had commented that it would be there some point next year.
Interesting is they showed the car in New Zealand or in Australia. I'm sorry, this week, and you know, then like on Twitter, people made a big deal about the crowd to see the car, and then the next day, someone posted a photo there was no crowd at all. So obviously, you know, a few hundred Tesla lemmings rushed out to see the car, and that's how many Tesla lemmings there are in Australia. But anyway, why didn't they show it in Europe? Why are they showing it? I mean, Europe is left-hand drive other than England, right? So why are they showing it in Australia? And that also makes me a little suspicious as to why they're not taking orders yet from Europe. I don't know. Maybe that's nothing. So I'm not looking. Now, you know, by the way, on this reservation thing, you know, there's this company called Second something that was tracking the credit card refunds to try to get an idea of where the reservation count was going. You know what I'm talking about?
I don't.
Yeah. So I'll think of the name. Anyway, a friend of mine just canceled his Model 3 reservation, and I've seen this elsewhere on Twitter. He couldn't get it reversed on his credit card. The only way Tesla was willing to do it was to mail him a check. I think it was the choice of mailing him a check or maybe a direct deposit in his checking account or maybe even a debit card or something. He couldn't reverse it on the credit card. That's to hide, I guarantee you, that's to hide the number of reservation cancellations from this company that was tracking them. So to your point, which you made about 2 or 3 minutes ago before I interrupted and sidetracked us, about, you know, it would be so much better if they were honest about this stuff. If Tesla was honest about this stuff and Musk was honest about this stuff, the stock would collapse because the true story is nowhere near as good as the myth that he's built up. So
I think that if they had done an equity issuance and then he had just leveled with the market afterwards, I think the stock would have come down some, but it wouldn't
have.
Wait,
done an equity issuance when?
Back when the last time they raised capital, when the stock was $350 a share and they issued debt instead of issuing equity.
Oh, you're talking about last summer. Right.
Yeah. I'm saying if they had just issued equity then and they had just calmed down, if they had just fucking calmed down and started to level with the market even a little bit more gradually, yes, the share price would go lower. And when you work at a company that doesn't look good and it gets you a little bit of negative press here, there, and the other.
Listen, let me ask you something. Donald Trump is 70 years old and he entered the presidential office. Did the guy stop, you know, talking out of his ass? I mean, tigers don't change their stripes.
Oh, no. But the point, you're right. I think you're right. But the point I'm trying to make is the stock would have went down and then life would have went on. I mean, I think people that are preoccupied with what the stock is doing versus what the operation of the business are doing. And I think that's the case with Musk.
Sure.
At least that's what I believe. They're just looking at the wrong thing. I mean, the stock's going to do what the stock's going to do. And shorts and longs and bulls and bears are going to make their case no matter what, whether the stock's at $1 or whether it's at $500. There's going to be a counterparty. There's going to be somebody that is on the other side of whatever side of the trade that you support. So to preoccupy yourself with worrying about that shit instead of just focusing on your business. I mean, you think Satya Nadella is out there worrying about what fucking short sellers and Microsoft are doing? Like, of course
he is. But he's got a real company. See, this is the funny thing. So people go, oh, if only Musk focused on the business. The business is a shit pile. The business is a money-losing car company. And if he focused on it, He would drastically, I mean, if he did it the right way, he would drastically shrink the ambitions of this company. He would drastically shrink the story. And, you know, it would be a car company selling at 1.5 times revenue instead of 1 times revenue like the other car companies, right? Except it's too late for that because they've got $10 billion of debt, right? So, you know, he can't just stop tweeting and stop bullshitting with pie in the sky stories, because then the whole fucking thing collapses, and then he loses the 5 connected Bel Air mansions that he spent $73 million for. Then the G650ER, which is the largest and probably most polluting private plane you can buy, you know, short of a converted airliner, that he, by the way, uses to commute to work between Bel Air and San Jose when he goes there, right? I mean, all that would go away, right? And this guy would have to have like a human-sized carbon footprint. And God forbid that would happen to this guy who's saving the world with electric cars, right? You know, I was talking about this yesterday or today on Twitter. You know, the Tesla slogan is, saving the world or something, transitioning to alternative energy, right? I mean, that's their slogan, whatever it is, right? Meanwhile, they are completely slashing and burning the solar division. That's another great lawsuit, by the way, which is well detailed.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting how that plays out, isn't it?
Right, right. You know, all this stuff that Musk did to just bail out himself and his cousin and his brother, right? That's a great lawsuit. I mean, by the way, this is another reason why I don't see anybody putting real money into this company other than for a short-term transaction, because you're just buying this shitload of lawsuits, and they're all really great lawsuits. But anyway,
yeah, I feel like they all have merit too.
Like, so
I see, I watch companies get sued all the time,
right?
And I read a lot of complaints. Obviously, I'm not a lawyer, but some are better than others. And I feel like the Model 3 lawsuit, with the amount of people that they have on record, and the Solar City lawsuit, with it being such an obviously horrible transaction for shareholders, I feel like they really have merit.
Right. So how are they – right, exactly. So, you know, back to the point, how are they accelerating the world's transition to alternative energy if they're slashing and burning their solar division, which they clearly are, right? I mean, you know, so where – how are they generating alternative energy? I mean, you know, these cars are running on somebody else's coal plant or gas plant or solar plant, but they're not doing anything – to create more alternative energy. I mean, okay, so they are reselling, buying and reselling at no profit battery cells from Panasonic and Samsung, which I guess, okay, they could say they're using those to, you know, to store wind power or whatever the fuck they're doing with them, or solar power. But, you know, Samsung is in that business. Panasonic is in that business. If Tesla wasn't buying it from those guys and reselling them at no profit, Samsung and Panasonic would be selling those storage batteries, right? So Tesla right now, as it slashes the solar thing, they're not doing anything to accelerate the world's path to clean energy or whatever that stupid slogan is. You know, they're just not doing it. That's another nonsensical statement. I mean, if you're out there and you work for Tesla and you see Solar City being completely slashed, do you actually still believe in that you're accelerating the path to alternative energy? Really?
Yeah, Solar City was a mess, and that's everything that I've been reading indicates to me that they're trying to just cauterize that wound and stop the bleeding internally that Solar City's causing. So what benefits has Tesla, and what benefits have Tesla shareholders derived from that transaction? The answer, I think, is nothing, aside from a huge debt bomb. You know,
there were three Tesla shareholders who derived a benefit from it. They're all, two of them are named Musk, and the other one is a cousin of Musk.
Right, right. Yeah,
that's it.
That's right. I mean, I don't think legacy Tesla shareholders are gaining anything from owning Solar City. That transaction is really wild. I mean, that's a really wild transaction.
Well,
to
wild
me.
Is one word, and smelly is another word.
Yeah, I would use that word too. I would go so far as to use that word. I mean, that's the prototypical company that you just don't buy out. And really, I mean, to me, obviously, I'm not a fucking economics professor, but, you know, and I'm not a CFA or a CPA or anything, but, like, you just don't buy an unprofitable company with a shitload of liabilities. Like, doesn't seem to make any sense. I mean, Are there patents? Is there intellectual property? Is there brand equity? I mean, what's going on there?
It's obvious what went on there, and you can read it all in the lawsuit. Again, Zero Hedge published a great summary of it. As did this guy on Twitter at Tesla Charts, did like a 12 whatever the number was, number of posts, which was a great. He read the whole lawsuit and put it into like concise bullet points, and that's actually in the Zero Hedge article that they did. I mean, if you can Google that and find it. If you just Google, zerohedge.com, Solar City lawsuit, you'll see it. And so it's obvious what happened there, right? So, I mean, this is what I don't get. I mean, you got guys running mutual funds. It's plain as day what Musk did.
Right.
There, right? And, I mean, how is this guy investable?
I don't know.
Let's say the SEC was never involved.
Right.
How do you invest in a guy like this?
Right. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. I mean, certainly it doesn't make sense to me. And I'm not the smartest guy in the world, so I would hope
you don't have to be. Neither am I. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I'm sure Musk has, I've said it. I'm sure the guy's got at least 10 IQ points on me, maybe more. But his mistake is thinking you have to have his IQ to see through his bullshit.
Right.
It doesn't take that.
And I think the mistake that the investing public could be making, the people that own this stock, are assuming that he's playing some eight-dimensional game of chess that nobody knows what he's doing next, when there's a real case to make that maybe he's just playing checkers the whole time. There's a real
fucking case. No, he's not even playing checkers. He's playing fucking tic-tac-toe.
You could make that case, and obviously the guy's brilliant, right? Like, he's obvious.
No, I don't think it's obvious that he's brilliant.
Well, he's
dead. I think he's a brilliant talker. I mean, obviously not particularly eloquent, but he's got his shtick, which people seem to like, and he's a brilliant money raiser and teller of stories. But I don't know that he's a brilliant guy. Let me put it this way. I'd guess his IQ is in like the 140s and not the 180s, So I don't think he's brilliant.
Okay. Do you think that I wonder if we could get his IQ. Hold on. Let me see if I can find it.
No, I once Googled that. There was just a bunch of speculation on Quora, but nobody actually
estimated at 155.
Yeah. Whose estimate is that?
That's what came up on Quora. He's estimated at 155.
Yeah, that's just – no one – believe me. I doubt his IQ is 155. So.
Where are you, Mark?
My IQ or his?
Yours. Where are you?
Well, I was only measured as a kid. I think I was like 135 or something.
All right. So you're hanging.
I'll give him 10 points on me, but that's it.
Okay.
I mean, he's great at raising money. He's brilliant at certain things, but – listen, this is a guy, and I've said this before, but this is a guy, he grew up, he sees like a cover of a popular science magazine in like the 1970s, or, probably found a stack of them because he was born in 71. And he's like, oh, relandable rockets. Oh, cool. We're going to do this, right? But, relandable rockets have been around. They started with them in the 1940s, okay? 50 years ago, 49 years ago, using only primitive computers, we sent, four or five missions of men who landed on the moon and then took off in a reusable rocket, docked with the lunar, module or whatever, and flew home. Those were reusable rockets, okay? I guarantee you that Lockheed Martin or Grumman or, the Skunk Works, all these brilliant guys, those are brilliant guys. That if it was profitable to use reusable rockets, they'd be doing it.
Right.
Okay. Everything I've read is SpaceX doesn't make money. And in fact, this is for years they claimed on the website that they were profitable. And then the Wall Street Journal did this whole expose on them and found out they weren't profitable. And they pulled it off the website, right? So these things he does, I mean, look, his electric cars lose a fuckwad of money, right? Do you think that if Mercedes-Benz or BMW or Audi, that if they thought they could make money on electric cars, that they wouldn't have had these electric cars out in 2012? They have them out now because they're being mandated by governments, and because they don't want to lose any more market share to Tesla, which I understand. But Tesla's stealing their market share by selling, a dollar of product for 90 cents. right? So now Mercedes and all these guys will put out their electric cars, and they'll probably lose money on them, or maybe at best break even, but they'll cross-subsidize it from their other cars, and they'll stop losing market share. But really, until we have solid-state batteries, electric cars are not a mass-market item. And any time the incentives go away, the sales go away. In any country, that's happened. And, you know, it would happen here, too.
Got you. And while you were explaining all that shit, I kept reading about, I'm trying to figure out what his IQ is. Everybody is saying it's people are generally saying it's in the 170s. They're saying between 160 and 200.
Yeah.
But I also learned some other interesting things.
Yeah.
Which Sharon Stone has an IQ of 154. Stephen Hawking's at 160. Okay. Judith Polgar, who I don't know if you know who she is, but she's a like extremely gifted female chess player. She's at 170. So Hawking was only at 160.
Right. You think Elon Musk is fucking within IQ points of Stephen Hawking?
He
couldn't.
He could have an IQ that high and just have, you know, something else that is precluding him from running this business properly or from coming out and being 100% truthful. I don't know if one necessarily has to do with the other.
But all his ideas are like borrowed from magazine covers. What original product does this guy come out with? Even Tesla, by the way, he basically, you know, funded and then booted out the guys who started it. That wasn't even his idea.
Do you think that the media has basically just christened him over the course of these 5 years because the cause, I guess, is so quote unquote noble? And
yes.
Do you think the media has just christened him and made his public image out to be somebody who's
insanely
smarter than he is?
Yes. And you know, that's turning not so much the intelligence. They still call him a genius. Now they call him a tortured genius. But, you know, look, the media has a very sort of green liberal bias, and that's not a secret. That's not like, I'm no right winger. I'm sort of a centrist kind of guy. But they do, and so therefore they were willing to forgive a lot on Musk because, oh, he's going to save the world with electric cars, right? And that's the story he told them. Now, why the media never calls him out on his massive carbon footprint, I don't know. They don't.
Yeah, that's an interesting story, right? If he's flying around this fucking jet that's running on hydrocarbon-based fuel.
He's a total hypocrite. And selling flamethrowers.
Right.
What's the point of a flamethrower? That puts out a shitload of CO2, even that stupid little thing he was on. Anyway, so the media gave him a pass for a long time. And by the way, some people in the media still give him a pass. I'm not going to name particular news organizations that, you know, charge thousands a month for their terminals, but he does seem – certain organizations do seem to give the guy a bend over backwards to give him a pass. And, you know, but that changed a few months ago when he didn't like something some people wrote, and then he said he's going to call out the media, and he sounded very Trumpian. He said he's going to start up this thing called Pravda, you know, D-U-H, you know, to track media accuracy. This is despite like 100 adoring magazine covers he had up until then, right? And then what really also set off the media was the contribution to the Republicans, because in the eyes of the media, other than, you know, maybe the National Review and Breitbart, I mean, you're Satan if you give money to Republicans, right? So, you know, this guy is like, if he were smart, he wouldn't be burning his best asset, which is an adoring and gullible bunch of lib journalists, but he has. And to their credit, there are a number of journalists who I know are extremely liberal, because I can look at their tweet streams, and half their tweet streams are about how Donald Trump is Satan, but they are now really digging into Tesla and finding really legitimate problems with this company, and they're writing about them. And not all journalists are, and I won't name the ones who aren't, but the ones who are, you know, have been terrific. And I should say Trump called them out. Musk called them out. I mean, you know, Laura Kolodny kicked it off, and then Lopez has written great stuff, and you know, these people are calling him out on stuff now. You know, Lynette Lopez, I meant, yeah.
Yeah, Lynette Lopez is not a Republican, I'll tell you that.
I mean, look at her tweet stream. I mean, I would love to follow her on Twitter, actually, to get her great Tesla stuff. But like, too much of the tweet stream is just political, really left-wing political.
Well, I think politics, like, one of those things where you know, you have to realize you're not going to agree with everybody. And I try to keep as much aside. You know, I tweet sometimes about political stuff, but when it comes to speaking to somebody, like, I have no idea what your political affiliation is, nor do I really give a shit. And I try to keep that stuff aside in favor of having civil discourse, and because I don't like to judge somebody based on their political affiliation. And there's people out there on the right, and there's people out there on the left that do that. And it just doesn't make sense to me. And so, like, in the case of Lynette, like, you know, I happen to know that she's not a Republican. I think her journalism has been fantastic. I think that the work that she's a fucking professional. I think and this nonsense that, you know, Ross Gerber gave me on the last podcast, and this nonsense that Musk has come out with, that
you
like, okay,
can we
trust her and all this shit, is fucking bullshit. Like I said to Ross Gerber, you know, she was an adjunct professor at Columbia. Like, I don't give a fuck what your political affiliation is. If you were a journalism professor at Columbia, you probably cut the mustard as a journalist, you know?
Well, what does that even mean? Can we trust her? I mean, she presents the evidence.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean,
like a good journalist. Exactly.
Yeah, she's a great journalist. She presents the evidence.
And she's done so with other companies in the past, too. It's not just Tesla, you know? So,
yeah. Yeah, so,
I completely get your point. Anyways, look, I got to call this a day, man. It's, I don't want to hold you too long, and I feel like we would just talk for fucking 3 hours if we got going. And, you know, you said to me before we got started, you're like, oh, you really think we're going to do 90 minutes?
I know, it's funny.
That's
yeah.
crazy. And then I brought you on, and you started talking for 75 minutes nonstop, so.
I mean, people could have watched an actual movie, like a real movie, instead of listening to this shit for the last...
Why,
know, 80 minutes.
Why would
so
you?
I want to apologize, by the way, to anybody out there that, you know, you probably should have watched the movie, but we had fun doing this, I'm sure, right?
Oh, yeah, and we'll do it again. We'll definitely do it again.
Excellent.
So,
all right,
Mark,
you.
Listen, man, have a great weekend. Appreciate you coming on.
You too. Take care. Bye-bye.
That was the one, the only Mark Spiegel of Stanfill Capital Management. You guys have any clue about how he feels on Tesla? Do you have a clue? Anybody? Jesus Christ. I thought I get hyped up about stuff. Mark gets really hyped up. But it's awesome having him on. It's nice hearing his perspective. I don't agree with him on everything, as I'm sure you gathered from our conversation. But when it comes to the investment thesis, I do agree with him on quite a bit. So it's good to have his perspective. It was nice to have Ross's perspective earlier in the week. He had one bull on this week. We had one bear on this week. Next week, we won't even talk any fucking Tesla. Next week, we're just going to keep it on other topics, because as I always say, this is not a Tesla podcast, okay? So if you're listening just for Tesla shit, you're going to find out the hard way when this story ends, and then I got to come sit here someday and talk to you about fucking baseball or whatever whatever else is going on. You're going to find out the hard way it's not just a Tesla podcast. But before I leave, listen, I want to say one more thank you to my Patreons. I really appreciate you guys. You've been coming through in a huge way. And it means a lot to me. I really appreciate it. Especially guys, Michael Samuels, Mike Kantowski, Robert Micello, guys that have been with me for a while. I really appreciate it. So that's it for now. It is Friday. It is happy hour. And I am the fuck out of here. Peace.